live reporter on assignment.
Where am I going?
Little place called Springwood.
An editor on the warpath.
I expect a new story faxed and on my desk first thing tomorrow morning.
And an imminent deadline.
Wonder how far that reporter's willing to go.
Faceless man murders hotel guest.
Gloria Loring stars on the next Freddy's Nightmares.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
And welcome to Primetime, a Freddy's Nightmares podcast. I'm your host, Enrique Couto, here with my good friend, Double D, Louis DeNoyer.
It's still funny.
And we are ready to take you back to Springwood. But I do want to mention that we have a real to talk about today.
That's so...
Yeah, well, see, you think I'm talking about you.
Yeah.
Bitch.
But no, I'm talking about the fact that Tubi did remove Freddy's Nightmares from the service, and that completely sucks.
It really does. I mean, like you and I were talking last show, I think they got a year out of it, tops, and we weren't necessarily not expecting this, but we were really hoping it didn't happen.
I mean, I knew that it was always a possibility, yeah. But I was definitely hoping it wasn't going to occur.
Yeah.
And it does stink because if you're watching this or listening to this, yeah. Oh, you can watch it, by the way, by going to freddysnightmares.com and clicking on Patreon. There's a special tier there for video podcasts. Every episode now, yes. From now on, relatively speaking,
yeah.
Is a video show. But... it sucks because now it's not readily available to people in the United States. And that was kind of the exciting element of it being on Tubi, was it was finally available on demand for anybody who wanted to check it out. And now that that's over, for now at least, we have no idea. It could pop up on another streaming service tomorrow.
It could. Totally could. And I mean, the best thing that we can say at this point is that it's not out of the realm of possibility that it will come back. And we will let you know if we do find it. But... yeah, as it stands right now, you're kind of out of luck.
David, stop ignoring Chicano. He had cancer. Pet him.
I'm petting him.
He's actually in the wide shot. You can see him a little. Oh, Dave, move that microphone stand behind you so we can get past you. See, it's right. Yep. Just move it against the wall so we can. He wants to get behind me.
Yeah.
Come here, buddy. Come on. I'll derail the show for my buddy boy. Come
That's
on.
Fair.
You want to lay back here? Come on. Don't be afraid. Come on. He's so timid. but yeah, so it kind of stinks, but I will say that while we will. And I mean this sincerely, we will not condone bootlegging,
yes.
And stuff like that. It's not that hard to bootleg the show.
No,
most
no,
of the
it's
episodes
not.
Are somewhere.
Somewhere, yes.
So, and that is not me being cute and saying, hey, so definitely bootleg
Don't,
it. I'm just saying, but I do believe that it is morally gray when you just freaking can't get it at all.
Yeah, I mean, when you can't get it, like you said, it is that gray line there, so... if you look hard enough, you absolutely can find copies of the complete series.
You mean if you look hard enough as in do one search.
Do
one Google search.
There are several different copies out there that are basically the same version.
Or crappy ones.
Yeah.
I mean, because honestly, in a way, it might be even more charming to watch
fun,
it on VHS rip on wherever. There may be some on YouTube. I've never looked.
Yeah.
We're very lucky. We were hooked up with a very special bootleg box set.
That we were.
And in the nick of time, because we didn't know until last week.
Yeah, we didn't have any idea until we got a message from our friend in one of our Facebook chats, and he was like, hey guys, did you see on Tubi there's an expiration date next to Freddy's? And I was like, no, but thank you.
Yeah.
So at the recording of this episode, unfortunately, it is gone, but rest assured, like I said, we will let you know if... that does come back, absolutely, because we want you to join in the fun with us.
For those of you watching the video, you'll get to see me prod David to keep his posture up. Poor Dave.
I slouch. Like,
well, not only that, it's just that the video version has caused so much hell. Well, no, hear me out. Because I'm a film person.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm at this point, I guess I'm pretty close to a broadcaster. Like I've done so many podcasts. I've done so many videos. So, you know, for you, you were always able to get away with like slouching or moving away from the mic or whatever. And it was no big deal because no one could see.
I was on the radio. Like I was used to that.
But I mean, also when we were doing the podcast with no video, you were able to do that because nobody cared. It didn't change the way you sounded.
Yeah.
I might mention in passing, be like, oh, try to stay on the mic. But like, you never got really bad.
No.
So now it's like, I'm just going to poke you.
That's fair.
That means posture check. But no, I'm proud of Dave because Dave, I will say, I like to make fun of you a lot.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fair.
What?
Well, I thought you had something to add to that. You said, I do like to make fun of you a lot. And then I
do.
You were going to...
Yeah, I absolutely do.
I thought you were going to extend on that.
Yeah. Oh, should I have said it? Like, should I have been like, I like to make fun of you.
You and your soundboard clips.
I haven't even, like, you. It's like Shaggy. You haven't even seen all of my power yet.
Oh, I know.
Because I haven't even loaded it with stuff yet.
Still got the same ones.
I've just got a few. Well, no, I added Pornhub and I added a few others. So, but before we get into the show, I do want, well, we're both going to air some grievances.
Yes, let's do this.
For once, not against each other. So David has been vague booking a lot lately.
One post.
And constant vague booking from David.
One post.
Because somebody had the audacity of parking their car with obnoxious bumper stickers in front of your apartment and then very likely dying.
It's hard to say. So to put it in perspective, it's been going on 2 weeks now. And we live on a pretty busy street. And it's not uncommon for cars to appear, but usually they will move along because my neighbor has a bunch of friends and family.
Well, you live
over
on a busy street. Yeah, so it's
not uncommon for cars. So this Durango was parked there for about 3-4 days before I like started taking notice of it, like not moving essentially. Like I thought it was like, you know, my neighbor had one of her kids over.
It was like constantly vibrating. Like you were like, this is not the drugs. This is the car.
So it was about, I think it was about Monday this week. I went to my neighbor and I was like, hey, do you know whose car this is? And she was like, no, I have no idea. So I went and looked in the car, and to give you an idea, this Durango has their front windows down. The passenger
like cracked,
and the driver,
though,
they're
not
cracked.
Not down,
not all the
cracked.
Way down. They're cracked. Yeah. And I'm walking up to this car just thinking, please don't let me find a dead body in this car. Please
don't act like that.
Don't let me find a dead body in this car.
You would have had so much content for the podcast if you'd found a corpse.
I mean, you're not wrong. That
would
have been amazing.
That. Yeah, it would have been nice.
But yeah, there's work clothes inside it. There's jumper cables. There's tools. And the city on Monday or Friday last week slapped a sticker on the window that it's going to get towed tomorrow. So
that person is dead.
I don't know, man.
Why else would somebody leave a perfectly fine vehicle?
Well, it's not perfectly fine. The belt, one of the belts is hanging off the front of it, like touching the ground.
One of the belts?
Yeah, like one of the belts.
Yeah, but belts aren't that hard to replace.
They're not.
And there's property in it.
I don't know.
I just feel like they're dead.
I went ahead and ran a check last night because.
Oh, did you pay?
I didn't do the full pay.
I only got
the vehicle history. I didn't get the name or anything because you can pay $13 to get the.
Yeah, but $13 isn't worth it to confirm and comfort a family who lost their loved one, right?
I mean, it's just not worth it. I'm not doing it. No. So tomorrow, hopefully, fingers crossed, the car gets towed and I get my parking spot back. But
fingers crossed. I mean, they said they're coming on Friday, right?
It's got a May 5th date on it. So that may be that's the cutoff. I don't know if they're going to tow it on that date. They may tow it Monday. I don't know. But I just want it gone.
Wow.
I just want it gone.
Remember, kids, David does not care if you're dead.
I don't think they're dead, but I do.
I think that they're so dead.
I don't know.
So
I have no fucking idea.
So, your story's adorable. There was no corpse, so it wasn't that good.
Yeah. What are your grievances?
So we've only been doing this podcast since October. How many fucking homeowner problems have I already had?
Like five.
And I bought this house like. I love this house, by the way, but I bought this house, what was it, like right before the show started?
Yeah.
Like a month or two? It was like September, August of last year?
Yeah, a month before, maybe.
Maybe it wasn't. No, you know what? It might have been November that I bought it. I can't remember.
I can't remember either.
It's hard because I rented it before I bought it, so it's not like I remember a moving day or something.
Yeah. I feel like you did secure it in October, though, but I could be wrong.
I felt like what I should have done is moved out and back in for the symbology of it. That way all of my friends could be like, ugh, because that's the thing that's unfair.
Yeah.
That is the thing I'm pissed about with all of my friends, but mostly you, David.
Fair.
Is
I don't know what, but fair.
No, is that you, Mr. Oh, I got apartments and stuff. I've helped you move, and I've helped you move again.
Yeah.
And you've never helped me move.
I have helped you clean your garage out. I've helped you put you away tree
paid,
limbs.
You got paid in whatever CDs
swag,
are.
Yeah, but I'd throw away all the toys and other stuff that you gave
oh,
me.
Oh, well, that was your dad, though, because you threw it into the work dumpster. But no, so I'm getting distracted. Sorry. I'm actually, unlike the last few weeks, I'm in like a phenomenal mood.
Same.
Somehow.
Same.
As opposed to like middling, which was me last week. So, my washing machine died last week.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, it did. And it had not, it was pretty obvious it was going to die.
Yeah.
It had been making sounds and it made a smell a couple weeks ago.
That's bad.
But Chicano got really sick and had an accident on the rug. I have a bunch of rugs because, well, you know this, but the audience might not. Henwolf, my other dog, she doesn't have a good time walking sometimes. So I put a lot of rugs, area rugs in the kitchen and stuff so that she gets purchase on them, you know, gets around and stuff like that. And it's nice because, you know, if they walk in with wet paws, their paws are mostly dry and whatever. Yada, yada. So anyway, so basically, I think it was on Thursday, I had this like filthy rug with like dog poop in it. I put it in the washing machine. I tried to balance the load
because
it started making the sound 3 years ago and I showed it to I called the appliance doctor.
Yeah.
Now back then, I was somewhat responsible for it, but I wasn't a homeowner yet. The appliance doctor was flat out like, man, I can fix it, but it ain't worth it.
Yeah.
Oh, he was like, I can fix it $100 more. You just get a new one.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's fair. So he said, he was like, just keep balanced loads in it and just run it till it dies. So I made the mistake of saying out loud, I just need the washer to make it till December, because then I'll have paid off some other home improvements and then I'd be happy to buy it. So what happens? Dead last week. But then, and now you're going to understand why I'm taking up so much valuable show time to talk about this.
Fair.
But then I buy it at Best Buy. I like buying appliances at Best Buy. You know why? Hmm. They're so happy to have you.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're like, just so you know, this one gets an automatic 18 months, no interest instead of 12. Like, they're so happy to sell you a washing machine.
Oh, yeah.
And their prices are competitive. So I got one at Best Buy. I paid for the full delivery and install, which is $25. So thanks for all your Patreon support. But they show up on Monday. These two dudes show up on Monday. They bring in the new washer and then they look at the hookup and they're like, we're sorry, sir. We can't do it. And I'm like, what's wrong? And he's like, your valves are corroded. We can't touch them. And I was like, damn it. Cause I know the place is old.
Yeah.
And I've had other valves that were corroded that I had to replace.
Yeah.
So I get to do the thing that all homeowners love. Called a plumber. $500 later,
yes.
I've replaced three valves. Jesus. because Dave, I was pissed, but I was like, I'm going to check all the valves. So I found another valve with corrosion. I was like, all right, replacing these. There are only two original valves left in this house. I'll replace those at the end of the year.
Fair enough.
But they're not giving any problems yet, but they are original. But,
yeah.
So he fixes it. I call, I schedule. Now they left the washer here because they were like, oh, well, then we just send an install tech. We don't have to deliver it again. The install techs show up this morning or this afternoon of today that we're recording.
Yeah.
And they walk in, these two super nice dudes. They come in, they look at it and they're like, so what's going on? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, they had to cancel the install. You didn't get it all fixed. And I was like, no, I replaced the things.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh man, no, like, these pipes and stuff, they have to go through the wall and we don't do that because it's against policy to fish things through the wall because we might have to make the wire, the hole bigger or whatever. He was like, so I'm really sorry. They should have told you that. And then he looks at me, he goes, was they Dominican? And I was like, huh? And he was like, the people who delivered it. And I was like, yeah. He's like, that's why, man. Sorry. They don't know what they're talking about, man.
God.
It is not your fault, man. And I was like, oh man. So then I'm sitting there and I'm like, so what do I do? And he's like, I'm going to take a picture of it, send it to my supervisor, try to get permission to just do it.
Yeah.
So he's like, just go sit down and relax. So I go and sit down and relax. 20 minutes goes by, and then he knocks on my office door, which is open, but he knocks and he's like, "All right, you're all set, man." And I was like, "What?" And he was like, "Yeah, my supervisor said, yeah, just fish it through the hole." And then he was like, "And bro, he was like a 45-year-old black dude. He was like, "Bro, I want you to know, I totally get it. Like, you didn't build this friggin' house. You know, I own a house too that's like 50, 60 years old, and like, I get it, man. Enjoy your new washer." And I was like, "Dude, thank you.
So that's pretty cool.
That's why I have a smile on my face.
Yeah.
Because at first I was like, oh boy, I get to put on my best Karen voice and call Best Buy customer service and be like, your people are going to give me a refund for the cost of that plumber, which is what I would have done.
Yeah.
And but I didn't have to, which
that's
is
good.
Great.
No, it's good.
I don't enjoy doing that, but I will do it.
I
like being a squeaky wheel sometimes. I'm weird. I thrive on confrontation.
It's hard for me anymore to go, because I used to be able to go pretty full Karen, because I think you remember when I moved into my one apartment and Time Warner Cable at the time was really screwing with me.
Oh yeah, they were like, didn't they take your pet rabbit and boil it in your stove?
They didn't do that, but they no-showed like three times just trying to get internet in my apartment.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Literally, I was fed up with them. But I work customer service, so it's really hard for me anymore to get into that mindset being a dick.
And
I get it.
And I pick on Dave a lot. Dave is a very, and I mean this with love, a very soft person to be in customer service.
Oh, yeah.
So it is hard. There have been days where after you're done venting, literally all I have to say is, Dave, they don't even know you.
Nope.
Like, just let it go. And you're like, no, you're right, bro. Okay.
The worst by far was during COVID, but we don't need to go into that.
So we're done talking about that. We killed a lot of show.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to get that. I wanted to get, because you were telling me all about how you knew that the car wasn't to a dead person. And I was like, shut up. Let's do it. Let's talk about it on the show. So, all right. So this is, hold on.
Yes.
This is season 2, episode 2.
Yes.
Heartbreak Hotel.
You are correct.
And I want to say, Freddie better dress like Elvis or we riot.
I agree with that. That would be a nice add-on to the episode for sure.
I wouldn't hate it. So, but why don't you, Dave, give us the rundown of the things we care about.
All right. So we, like Henrik said, season 2, episode 2, Heartbreak Hotel. This episode was directed by William Malone. He is the director of Scared to Death in 1980. He also did Creature in 1985. He was on Dark Justice. And his two probably more famous ones, House on Haunted Hill, he was the director of in 99, and Fear.com in 2002.
And I remember hearing an interview with him. I think it was on the Movie Crypt.
Yeah.
He is such a cool dude.
He is. No, he's a really cool guy to listen to.
He's definitely, like, for lack of a better term, one of us. He's a friggin' huge
100%.
Movie fan and a total nerd, and I love it.
And then this episode was written by Jonathan Glazer, which last week I said he was the writer of one of Henrik and I's favorite movies in 92 called Mikey.
Oh, yeah!
He also did Alfred Hitchcock Presents, three episodes in 87. He was
relaunch
of it. Yes.
You're like, actually, he was 97 when he worked on Freddy's Nightmares.
21 Jump Street, CSI Miami, and Stargate SG-1. He is done like a he's done a bunch of work for them. I actually friend requested him to see if we could possibly get him on the show, because
he's such a nice dude.
Bet he would. He's one of the he was the executive story writer credit on IMDb for all of season 2.
Really?
Executive story editor.
Okay, so he might have been brought on after Freilich left being the regular guy there. He might have been brought on.
His name is on every single episode, which I missed last week, so I wanted to bring that up.
That's awesome, because we love Bill Malone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the episode opens inside the World Enquirer offices as we see the interior walls are adorned with multiple copies of paper with bombastic headlines. Did you read all the headlines by chance?
I didn't, because this week I had to kind of hurry up.
It's okay. I wrote them down.
Oh, good, good.
So we start with a shot of one that says, three-handed man marries three-breasted woman.
I mean, that is just good math.
Bishop's amazing exorcism.
Is that like jazzercise?
UFO stole my Buick. Man can't pass wind and explodes. Those are some of the headlines that we saw.
First of all, first thing I want to tell you is that this episode really made me miss the Weekly World News.
I can see that.
Were you a Weekly World News reader?
A little bit, yeah. I read it a little bit. I can't remember.
This is not my normal picking on you, but I'm sure you mostly just enjoyed the headlines and the pictures.
Oh, yeah.
No,
I didn't,
One of my favorite things about Weekly World News, man, they had it out for the Pope. They were always... remember, there was one where it was like, where it was meteor hits Pope again.
I do remember that.
And then the other one I loved was the one where it was like, congregation told not to say anything as Pope delivers address wearing Spider-Man mask. This was before the newest Pope, so he was like super old.
Yeah.
So they just depicted him as like insane. But I want to tell you, when I was a teenager, Weekly World News, for those who don't remember, I mean, Bat Boy, all that stuff, yep. They always had these ridiculous things, but it was completely fake.
Yeah.
And they knew it. But I loved it because I would actually read from cover to cover the Weekly World News.
That's amazing.
Because the articles were actually really funny.
Yeah.
And I used to, when I was 16 years old, I had a group of friends, you know, because we had like the one friend who drove. And maybe I was 15. Yeah, I was 15.
Wow.
We had what we called Pancake Night.
Yeah.
And it was a Monday night, I think it was, or Tuesday night. We would get in his car and we'd all go to Perkins, mm-hmm, and we'd order stacks of pancakes. And I would read the Weekly World News aloud to the table.
That's amazing.
And it was one of the funnest times as a young man I ever had, because those stories were so out there. But, yeah, but I cannot overstate, what did the Pope do to them? Also, you know who was a regular contributor on the Weekly World News?
Who's that?
Debbie Rochon, the actress.
No kidding.
Yeah, she was. She did like a psychic character. I forget the name of it. But actually, her photo in it was, if you really look, you're like, that is Debbie Rochon. Like, she has like a veil over and stuff.
That's
so
awesome.
You don't recognize her right away. But anyway, sorry. So awesome. I just want to say, because this is clearly what they've done, is they've taken the Weekly World News,
yeah,
the ridiculousness, but then turned it into the National Enquirer.
Yes.
So it's just a shameless National Enquirer, as if there is any shame at
shame
the National
to
Enquirer
all, yeah,
to begin with.
So we meet Roger Titano. He is played by John Stinson. He was in Fool Around in 1980. He was actually in Scared to Death in 1980, The Hand in 81, and one of Henrik's favorite films, Body Slam in 86.
I love Body Slam.
I know you do. He's packing up various toys and gags in his office while wearing a football helmet.
Which, by the way, I imagine this is how people picture the way I work every day in my office.
I can
it's
see
just
that.
Like, I'm like putting on a football helmet. I'm like, okay, let's make the picture, you know, like, which is not far off from the truth, really.
So his boss, Ellen Kramer, he's picked up various toys and gags in his office while wearing a football helmet. His boss, Ellen Kramer, played by Gloria Luring. She was a singer on the Dean Martin Show in 1970. She was credited for the theme of Different Strokes, Facts of Life theme.
Really?
Freaks
the
and
Facts
Geeks,
of Life.
Chappelle Show.
Wait, are you talking about the music?
Yeah, she was a singer. So she wrote the uh-huh songs,
yeah,
and
yeah
also sang some of them.
I wonder if she, on the Chappelle Show, if she wrote that white girl song.
She might have. I can honestly see that. So she walks in stating she came to say goodbye. Roger removes the helmet and tells her to shoot, which perplexes Ellen, so Roger states to say her goodbyes. She tells him that's very funny to Tana, which causes Roger to tell her to call him Roger since he's calling her Ellen now and he no longer works for her. He then offers her a jawbreaker candy, which he throws into the air, dropping it on the floor right in front of her. Ellen asks him if there's any way that she can change his mind about leaving, and Roger replies, not a chance.
Not a chance.
Ellen tells him that in that case, she wants to get one more story out of him, and Roger informs her that he is no longer writing this doo-doo, and by this time next week, he'll be writing great pieces for the Chicago Tribune.
And doo-doo was a quote,
yes,
a direct quote.
It was a quote indeed. So a real paper is what he calls the Chicago Tribune.
Which is a stretch, but fine.
Ellen reminds him that till the end of the week, he still works for her, so Roger reluctantly agrees to hear what she wants. Ellen gets a grin as Roger asks, what is the fairy tale this time? And Ellen fires back with, the World Enquirer reporter commits suicide. Suddenly, a man appears with a giant paper cutter, which he slides in front of Roger and shoves his head down onto it as Roger pleads that Ellen is out of her mind. She adds that circulation should double with this picture on the cover as she takes up a camera and a snapshot of Roger's head on the cutter. We are then shown a mock-up of the cover with Roger screaming in terror, but suddenly hear Ellen's voice scold Roger about sleeping on her time.
I mean, he looked like he was getting a good one in, too.
He was getting a good nap, yes. We then see Roger is fine and was having a nightmare as he wakes up face down on his desk with Ellen beside him. Roger tells Ellen that he has to sleep because he does his best work when he's sleeping.
He sounds like he was kind of being sarcastic when he said that. He's like, I do my best work when I'm asleep.
Ellen informs him that she had to fix a grammar mistake in his Bigfoot story, and he needs to be clear on his pronouns, pointing out that his wording is confusing and unclear on the story.
Yeah, he used he twice. Without making it clear. So who was the other person? It was Elvis and Michael Jackson?
Bigfoot.
It was Bigfoot, yeah. Bigfoot and Michael Jackson. Sorry, I got it. It was Bigfoot, Michael Jackson, and he'd made it. He used he twice in a row, yeah. So you couldn't tell who saved who. She was like, "Well, who saved who?" He's like, "Bigfoot saved Michael Jackson."
So she tells him to work on his pronouns, pointing out that his wording is confusing and unclear on the story. Roger asks what his next assignment will be, to which Ellen informs him he'll be going out of town to a small town called Springwood.
Bitch.
Roger asks her what's in Springwood, and Ellen informs him Elvis, causing Roger to laugh and ask Presley. Ellen informs him there's been several sightings at a hotel he is supposedly staying at, and so he'll be leaving in an hour, as she hands him a plane ticket. Roger looks at the plane ticket, replying, "At least can I fly on airlines I recognize?" Which, yeah, I did like that.
Yeah, I felt like when he said what's in Springwood, she's been like, fucking everything. I mean, yeah. There's a secret military underground base that has nuclear bombs. There's a really big ice rink,
yes,
too. But it'll never compare to how bizarrely large the synagogue in Derry, Derry is in in it. That was the only, because we just saw Are You There, God?
It's, yeah, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
And I love that movie, by the way. It was a great
super
movie.
Good,
but yeah, well, her father's side is Jewish.
Yeah.
And yeah, you leaned over and you were like, this one, at least this one makes sense on like Derry's gigantic synagogue in a town with like 180 people.
So we then cut to Freddy's domain, where we find Freddy leaning against a wall, reading the World Inquirer and enjoying himself as he says, "Man explodes, aliens torture woman to death, Bigfoot eats Bambi. I love it. I love this paper. Not afraid to lie. No ethics. Not afraid to step over the line." He closes the paper with wide eyes and continues.
Wait, Dave, you just said Freddy said that. You didn't say Rupert Murdoch said that. It's okay. Like, it's an easy mistake to make. Both of them look very strange. Similar. And wow, I almost straight up slandered. I'm done. I almost straight up slandered Rupert Murdoch. I don't even have a bone to pick with the guy.
So Freddy closes the paper and says, "Wonder how far that reporter's willing to go. Maybe I'll give him a little test."
Oh.
We cut back to Roger, who's arriving at his hotel and introducing himself to the clerk, who is played by Owen Bush. This man, Henrik, has 149 credits.
Oh, he's one of those guys who's in the thing. And that's not an insult. There's a documentary about character actors called That Guy Who's in That Thing. So when I say that, that's my way of saying he is one of those people in tons of great stuff.
149 acting credits, starting in 1953. He had Maverick, Lassie, Andy Griffith, Valley of the Dolls in 67, Vanishing Point. And then we get into the fun stuff, like The Last Starfighter in 84.
Yeah.
Pre-Hysteria 2.
Oh, I just did a podcast about Pre-Hysteria with our buddy, the Birdman.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. For his show, This Week in Geek.
Yeah.
And I can't wait. I need to rewatch Pre-Hysteria 2. I have a VHS of Pre-Hysteria 3.
I know you do.
Directed by Dave Dakota.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So he offers his hand, but only gets a look back at a response. Roger begins to ask him about the claim of Elvis living in the hotel, and he asks the clerk if he's here, and the clerk tells him that he left this morning, said he was going to go do a concert with John Lennon.
Man, Elvis really has fallen from grace. He's doing a show with that guy.
But he'll be back in a couple of days. Disappointed, Roger goes to the phone and calls Ellen, informing her about Elvis being on tour with Lennon. Ellen tells him that's very funny, but Roger reassures her that that's what the desk clerk told him before continuing that he figures with the story being a bust, he'll still try to make his interview in Chicago with the Tribune.
Yeah,
Ellen tells him,
great.
Wrong. He's going to get a room and wait for Elvis to return, but in the meantime, find a new story to kill time.
I love that like, because they're such lying sacks.
Yeah.
It's not even like she says find a new story, and then the next thing he does is just laying in bed making crap up.
Yeah.
So he's really just writing short fiction.
Yeah. And he's good at it too. But we'll get there.
Well, is he?
We'll get there. He gets to his room and he gets to get a room and wait for Elvis and to return, but in the meantime, find a new story to kill time. Roger goes to argue about his interview, but Ellen interrupts, telling him she expects to have a new story faxed and on her desk by the morning before Roger hangs up.
Oh yeah.
We next see him unpacking, including a huge Ziploc bag of jawbreakers, as a knock is heard at the door, followed by the announcement of room service. Roger opens the door to a pregnant woman named Mary, who is played by Tiffany Helm. Henrik, do you recognize this woman, by the way?
Oh, first of all, I've made it a personal rule never to recognize women.
Okay.
So who is she? Tell me. I'm really curious.
Is Violet in Friday the 13th Part 5, the chick with the raccoon hair that does the dance and gets killed by Jason.
Yes, no wonder I couldn't recognize her because she looks very, very different in Friday. Wait. David, did you just...
Oh, man.
You can't bring up other franchises here without something happening, man. I'm just trying to look out for you.
Well, then she was also in Reform School Girls in 1986.
Yeah, now that's what's up.
Red Letter Day in 2019.
Wait, really?
Mm-hmm. And she was in 13 Fanboy. I think she's the mom.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I knew she was in 13 Fanboy, rather, not 13.
So Mary enters with a large tray telling him that his order of chocolate cake, cheesecake, cookies, and two pots of coffee is ready for him.
I'm glad somebody makes me look like I have healthy eating habits. It's about time.
Noticing that Mary's pregnant, Roger asks her if she knows, and she confirms that she does. He takes a tray from her, telling her to have a seat. She asks him if he's going to eat all that by himself, and Roger informs her that the caffeine and sugar helps him stay awake to work on his story. Mary suddenly lets out a shout, and Roger replies with, "Yeah, that's how I feel too after eating all that stuff." But she informs him that she thinks the baby is coming. He offers her a glass of water and calls the front desk, telling her that they better send someone up before this woman squeezes out a brand new person in the middle of room 23.
And this guy, this actor, he's great.
Oh, he is.
He's so good. Half the time, he's just making smart aleck comments with a big jawbreaker in his cheek.
Yeah.
Have we run down him?
John Stenson is his
name. Yeah. So he just kills this. Well, he's so good.
One thing we haven't said because they'll mention in the episode later is he also just looks very slobbish every time you see him.
Oh yeah, he just looks like you're like, "Oh, he just rolled out of bed and here he is."
Yeah. So Mary continues to gasp. He hangs up and walks over to her, telling her to keep breathing. She asks him if he's married, to which he replies no. She then tells him it would be awfully nice if he would offer to drive her to the hospital. He offers to call her husband, but Mary informs him that her boyfriend left when he found out that she was pregnant.
Uh-oh.
He apologizes and says it was her fault, as she doesn't know what possessed her to go out with that skunk, and Roger's eyes widen as he questions, "Possessed?" We next see him at the hospital talking to Ellen on the phone, telling her the headline, "I gave birth to the devil's baby." Ellen tells him that's page one material and asks if he can fax it to her by tonight. Roger tells her he's got permission to take shots of the birth, so he will have to bring the negatives back so they can doctor the photos up with horns and the tail. Ellen tells him that she will see him after he meets with Elvis and hangs up before Roger can argue about the interview again. Roger, defeated, hangs up the phone as a doctor asks him to come to the delivery room. In the delivery room, doctors instruct Mary to push as the head is almost out. The doctor suddenly looks concerned, but Roger asks if she can hold the baby up for a picture. The doctor tells him she'd rather not do that, and Roger asks why. Suddenly, lights begin to flash and the room begins to shake as an abnormally sized devil baby is brought out of Mary. And when I say
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that they just reused the baby from Nightmare 5.
Yes, it's the Freddy baby.
It looks like the Freddy baby, but it's just a baby doll. It's not like a puppet. Like, they just kind of handed it to them.
Yeah, it 100% looks like it.
It has to be the Nightmare 5 baby or a sculpt from the sculpture of that baby. It has to be 100%. When I saw that baby, all they did was they digitally added horn. I guess it would have been digitally back then. But yeah, they added like horns when they held it up and it freeze framed. And literally in my notes, it's all caps. It just says, "Did they just recycle the Freddy baby from Part 5?
I think they did.
Oh, well, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle.
Exactly.
Bitch.
So suddenly Roger hears someone calling to him. He wakes up in the waiting room as the doctor calls to him again, revealing that that was just a nightmare.
Oh.
Roger apologizes. The doctor informs him that since they couldn't find him, they had to go ahead with the delivery of the baby without him. Roger then asks about a picture, but the doctor denies him, telling him that the baby was unfortunately a stillborn.
Wow. Wow, we're really rocking and rolling on Freddy's Nightmares tonight. Stillborn babies.
Roger asks about Mary, and the doctor informs him that she is fine and didn't see the child, fortunately. Roger asks, what does she mean by that? And he is informed that the baby had a skull disconfiguration that made it look almost as if it had horns.
I love that the nurse tries so hard not to say that.
Yeah,
she just gives like technical jargon and technical jargon. He's like, "Yeah, but what does that mean?" She's like, "It means that there were a malformation on the cranium." He's like, "But what do you mean?" She's like, He looked like he had horns. And he's like, whoa!
So Roger takes in the news and appears shocked. We later see him on his bed at the hotel talking to Ellen, informing her about the baby. She questions why he cannot do the baby story, and Roger informs her again of the stillborn baby. She questions why he didn't get the shots if it really did have horns. Roger calls her one sick puppy, but she fires back that if he wants to write real stories for the Tribune so bad, and now he has one. He informs her again he's not proceeding with the story, and Ellen then lies, telling him that she's holding a letter for him from the New York Times, asking if she would like him to read it.
Was it clear that she was lying?
Yeah, because all she does is open an envelope, because that's basically, she holds an envelope up and just opens the top of it.
I thought so, but then part of me thought maybe they were just being artsy with it, so I wasn't sure.
So
she basically reads him that.
Gaslighting him.
Yeah. Well, no, not gaslighting. Gaslighting would be me saying, like, Dave, why are you wearing that shirt? You know what that shirt did, do you? You know, that's gaslighting. Lying would be, Dave, that's my shirt. Give it to me. That's not gaslighting. That's just lying and bullying.
Fair.
She lied and bullied him.
So Roger tells her, of course, he wants to hear what the letter says.
Of course he does, yeah.
She takes the letter opening sound, or she takes the fakes a letter opening sound with an empty envelope, and then fakes reading, stating that they are passing on him due to his aptitude of punctuation and spelling. Defeated again, Roger tells her that he will come up with a new story before hanging up. He leaves his room and goes down to the hotel stairs, passing a gentleman who looks like a young John Lennon carrying a guitar.
Just walking right by, Zooming right by. We don't get a good look at him.
Causing Roger to double take before making his way to the desk.
I like this direction they're taking Springwood, by the way, that people are just like, Mr. Presley should be back in a couple of days.
Oh, Springwood.
I would live in Springwood if... No, I wouldn't.
He asks the clerk if Elvis has returned, but he informs him, not yet. Not giving up, Roger asks the clerk if he has any other good stories, if anything weird ever happened here. Anyone killed? Walls ever talked? Spontaneous combustion? The clerk tells him nothing offhand, but he'll keep his mind on it and let him know. Roger turns and bumps into another gentleman who tells him he better get a move on getting his luggage up to his room. The man is identified as George Teller, who is played by Stacy Keach Sr., 115 acting credits.
Whoa.
Also, Maverick, Lassie, Ants in 77, Saturday the 14th, and my favorite, Superstition in 82. Henrik, he is the reverend that has the buzzsaw go off the blade and fly through him and go through his chest into the chair.
Oh my God, yeah.
That's him.
Wait, and is he Stacy Keach's dad?
I think he is, yeah.
Because I didn't know Stacy Keach came from an acting family.
Yeah.
We love Stacy Keach around here.
So
that's really cool.
He is identified as George Teller by another gentleman who introduces himself as Tom Gibson, played by Jack Manning. Tom Gibson was on Barnaby Jones in 1972, Herbie Rides Again, 74, and Mr. Show in 97.
He was on Mr. Show?
He was on several episodes of Mr. Show.
I mean, I love Mr. Show.
I do, too. So he is the owner of the local paper. Tom tells George that it took him a whole lifetime to build the paper, and George fires back with telling him, that's funny, because it'll only take him one day to destroy it and replace him with someone younger and hipper.
Oh, in your face, big disgrace. I don't have an air horn sound.
Angering Tom, he begins to call Mr. Teller a heartless son of a bitch, but Teller begins to move up the stairs, telling his bodyguard Lou, who is played by Jay Bohr, he was a stuntman for The Money Pit, Lock Up, Jungle to Jungle, and The Sopranos.
Whoa, Jungle to Jungle. Yes. All right.
To follow him. Tom tries to follow, but is shoved to the ground by Lou. Roger tells the clerk that was George Teller, the newspaper tycoon, which causes the clerk to begin telling him about the murder here last year. Roger asks him what happened, and the clerk tells him a man got killed, and that's it. They never caught the guy, but the clerk saw him run out, but never saw his face.
Oh.
This causes Roger to begin putting together a story of a faceless murderer. He chuckles and returns to his room, where he begins to record the story of the faceless murderer in the hotel. He strings together a story of an old maintenance man at the hotel named James, who was tragically defaced a year ago by a traveling chainsaw salesman.
Well, when you say defaced, you don't mean defaced, you mean defaced. You mean there was a face.
Yes.
And then there was no face.
We then cut to a shot of Roger in a bubble bath in the hotel, wearing a military captain's hat and playing with toys, when a shadowy figure looking like a maintenance man appears in the room, pulling down a light, exposing its electrical wires, which he then drops into the tub, electrocuting Roger. Suddenly, Roger comes to in the bathtub, revealing it all to be another nightmare, but suddenly the light in the bathroom bursts, causing Roger to exit the tub before the wires drop into the tub, electrifying the water.
Oh, it was very electrifying, Double D.
God.
Very electrifying.
That scene was pretty insane, I've got to say.
What? No. I'm just glad that we managed to get a nice bathtub scene in.
We did.
That man was a hairy drink of water right there. Wait. Yeah, I stand by that.
I stand by that. Yeah. The next scene, he's back on the phone with Ellen, informing her that everything he writes lately is coming true. Ellen tells him that's a good excuse, but Roger quickly informs her it's not pointing out, the horned baby first and now the bathtub electrocution. He adds he's now afraid to write anything. Ellen tells him it's convenient that he can't write the story, which will bring him back to town just in time for another interview.
Oh.
But Roger quickly reassures her that he will stay and write the story, but it's going to be a happy story. That way, if it comes true, he'll be okay.
Aww. Ellen wholesome him, content.
Ellen tells him happy stories don't sell papers, and she wants his usual violent, weird, and grotesque stuff, adding that he should write a story about him winning the lottery because he'll need the extra cash when she fires him.
Damn!
Assuming she hung up, Roger yells into the phone she can keep her $10 a week job because he quits and never wants to see her ugly face again before hanging up.
And I just want to say,
yes,
in all seriousness to anybody listening to this, that is not how you resign from a job.
No, it is not.
You would want to put that in writing.
That's true. Yes. He returns to the lobby, but is stopped by the clerk who tells him, I thought you would like to know that Elvis is dead. He thanks the clerk for the news flash, but the clerk also informs him that he has a new message. The message is from Levine at the Chicago Tribune, who tells him, don't bother coming to Chicago for the interview. They read his stuff.
Yeah. And I, you know, one of my favorite elements of this is... he's not good.
He's not.
He's not a good writer at all. So it's just one of those things like one of my favorite movies of all time, Eddie Presley.
Yes.
I love that movie so much. But one of the reasons that movie is so great is Eddie's not terrible, because that would be too obvious.
Yeah.
He's just not great.
No, he's not great.
He's fine.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the most heart-wrenching part of that movie is that when he finally performs, you're like, man, if he was just a little bit better, you know, like maybe he could take off, you know?
So he has another message that he tells him, which is from Ellen, who says, since he never wants to see her ugly face again, he's fired and she's not going to pay the hotel bill. Roger states he thought he hung up, taking in the news of his unemployment. The clerk then asks him about the hotel bill, and Roger assures him he will take care of it.
Yeah. He looks like a trustworthy gentleman.
We then see George Teller and Lou walk up to the desk, requesting a new room due to half the lights not working, nor the TV being workable. The clerk tells him there are no more rooms, but George slides him cash, asking him to find another room.
I love this exchange too, because I love when bribes just don't work.
Don't work.
Because he like slides him money. He's like, find me another room. He's like, I wish I had one for you, but I don't.
The clerk tells him, wish I did, but I don't. Roger's spitting out his jawbreaker, which that's one thing we need to say. The whole episode, Roger has a jawbreaker in his cheek and looks like a squirrel.
And spitting it out, as in, he drops it into his hand and puts it in his pocket.
Yes. Spits out his jawbreaker and offers Mr. Teller his room for a switch, causing Teller to ask who he is. Roger offers his hand to shake, but gets no response from Teller. He informs him that he works for another smaller paper, and Teller assumes he's looking for a job. Roger tells him he's entertaining offers.
Whoa. Blow her hand.
Roger tells him he's entertaining offers from other prestigious papers, but he's happy to entertain an offer. But Teller quickly tells him to forget it, as he doesn't hire slobs before he walks away.
Which is, I mean, again, not professional.
No.
Put it in writing.
Not at all. Roger tries to tell him he's not a slob and instead a young and hip, but Lou pushes Roger back as the two walk up the stairs.
Yeah, this isn't sloppy. This is young and hip. And they shove him out,
out of the way. Back in his room, Roger brushes his teeth, contemplating his next move before he picks up the tape recorder and states, billionaire takes poison, but quickly adds, billionaire leaves newspaper empire to reporter after he takes poison.
Yeah.
Roger goes to Teller's room, requesting he speak to him again. Teller welcomes him into the room with, well, if it isn't the slob. Roger
That's
tells
how, what I say when you come you into the house. Yeah, that, when you walk in.
You do say that. Roger tells Teller that he might be a slob, but he's young and hip and just the type he wants to take over the newspaper. Teller states that he knows this, which shocks Roger as he questions, what did you say? Teller states with a grin that he knows Roger is the man for the job and that down in the lobby he was just testing him.
Yes.
He needs a man who's a fighter and won't take no for an answer, ending his statement with, you got the job.
Listen, this is the thing I love. The phrase, I was just testing you.
Yeah.
That's just the best way to get away with being fucked up.
Yeah.
Like doing something fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, ah, my leg, you shot me with arrow. I was testing you. And you passed.
So he tells him he's got the job. Roger thanks him, and Teller says they'll drink to it. Lou hands Roger and Teller two cocktail glasses, and they cheers as Roger takes a sip, noticing that Teller does not drink out of his.
Oh.
He looks at his glass, asking, what's in this? Teller informs him that if it's the way Lou usually makes it, it's got vodka, peach schnapps, orange juice, and just a touch of arsenic.
Ah, yes, rat poison.
Roger, realizing he's been poisoned, questions about the poison in his drink, as that's not how he wrote the story before collapsing to the floor. Teller and Lou walk over to him, and Teller tells him that he'd like to leave him his newspaper empire, and begins to laugh before the two fade out before his eyes.
Oh!
We watch Roger pass and then cut to the hospital as Ellen meets up with Dr. Coppedge before asking about signing over Roger's body to return to the city along with his belongings. The doctor shows her his suitcases as Ellen asks if she's determined what his cause of death was. The doctor opens his suitcase, revealing the large bag of jawbreakers, and explains that he choked on one.
Of course he did.
Ellen fumbles through his case, retrieving the tape recorder, playing back his latest story idea. Billionaire leaves newspaper empire to reporter after he takes poison, then comments he never learns his pronouns, pointing out who took the poison, the reporter or the billionaire.
And I gotta say, death by pronouns, yeah. Timely.
Facts. Facts.
I made a funny.
We then see an orderly wheeling Elvis strapped to a cart past Ellen and the doctor. Ellen asks, who is that? As the doctor replies, Elvis.
Elvis, yeah.
She asks if he's dead, and the doctor replies, of course. Everyone knows that.
Well, did you mention that earlier, the guy at the front?
The clerk said it,
yeah. He mentioned, like, Elvis died.
Elvis died.
Elvis is dead. Yeah, so now Springwood is caught up with the world, except Elvis died Tuesday.
Tuesday.
You know, not a long time ago or something. Elvis is dead. And she's like, of course he's dead. Everybody knows
that. I love it, too, because then she goes off running after the cart. And she's like, hello? Stop.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Look, well, first of all, I mean, I all due respect to the medical workers of Springwood.
Yeah.
I guarantee they do long hours.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of double shifts and triple shifts.
Our A story ends as we cut back to Freddie, who's before a board reading, billionaire leaves newspaper empire to reporter after he takes poison. He comments, now there's a good reason to do your English homework. Learn the use of the proper pronouns or die.
Which is beautifully
yes,
done.
Yes, it is.
Beautifully
and that
done.
Is the end of the A story. Henrik, would you like to explain the A and B story again?
So, Freddy's Nightmares is different in that while they have the A and B story, which many of you may be aware of, or maybe not because of the writer's strike, the A and B stories on Freddy's Nightmare are a bit different because you have the A story is the first half of the show and the B story is the second half of the show. In order for them to have a show that they could split in half in order to distribute it differently in different markets. So in some markets, there were 22-minute episodes, so you might only get the A story or the B story. And in other markets, you would get it in its whole form. And what that means is that every episode is definitely a mixed bag because very rarely does the second story have the same tone or entire cast.
Yeah.
Only a few episodes so far have been that way, which like Black Tickets was kind of just
kinda like that,
more.
Yeah.
But of course, they changed the location a bit and stuff. So it's really fun, though, because you get to wonder, like, how are we going to connect them? But on this one, it is probably the laziest connection yet.
Very.
It's just the guy is also in the hospital.
And the hotel.
Well. Spoilers, Dom.
It happens quick enough.
Jeez.
All right. So our B story begins as we are back in the hospital. A corpse is being wheeled through the halls on a gurney with a hand outside the cloth as it rounds a counter brushing a young girl's butt. The girl turns around startled and we see that she's with another woman. Rachel Kelly.
Whoa. Wait.
Rachel Kelly, played by Anne Lockhart, she was on Incredible Hulk in 1979. She played a corpse in 10 to Midnight, the Charles Bronson film.
No, we won't.
She was in Troll in 1986.
Ah, not the good one, though.
And Diagnosis Murder. And her daughter, Sally, who was played by Tammy Ames, she didn't really have any other acting credits on this. As for Dr. Coppedge, Coppedge returns around and asks how they can help her. Rachel introduces them and explains that they are there to see her husband. Coppedge states that he's been an amnesia patient for 3 weeks and they were hoping the family would surface.
Oh, man. I love when Freddie harms the medically disadvantaged. It's his next favorite after straight trauma victims.
Yes, that is very true. Yeah. Yes. So Sally asks, how is he? And Coppedge explains he's physically okay even after being thrown from a car after it went over a cliff.
Yeah, and they keep showing this very clearly stock footage.
Well, it's the same one from Deadline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I knew I'd seen it before.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So Sally asks or tells him that he was thrown from a car after it went over a cliff. They ask to see him, and Coppedge leads them to his room. We cut to Jerry, who was played by Richard Cox. He was in Cruising in 1980. Hellhole in 1985.
Oh, have we seen that?
I have. I don't know if you have. It's not great.
Wow, that's the Dave stamp of approval right there.
The Vindicator in 1986, which I really like.
Now we're cooking with gas.
And Zombie High. He is dreaming of the crash he experienced. We then see a car winding a mountain road as Jerry begins to swerve along the road, sending him over the edge of a cliff. As the car rolls before bursting into flames, he comes to being awoken by Coppedge as Rachel asks him if he's okay.
Aww.
Jerry, confused, asks, who is she? And Rachel asks, don't you recognize this, Jerry? Jerry asks if that's his name as he sits up, and Sally tells him, hi, Daddy, causing him to question, Daddy?
Well, I mean, he should have been like, sup, girl?
Coppedge informs him that his wife and his daughter are asking him if they look familiar, causing Jerry to respond with a no. Oh. We then cut to Freddy's domain as he leans around a corner and states, me? I cherish my memories. Playing with bodies in the winter, torturing small animals in the spring, scaring old ladies in the fall. Oh, yes, I remember it well.
Freddy's so good in this episode.
He really is. Too bad Jerry can't, but don't worry. What I'm going to do to him, he'll never forget. So, just to review that again.
Yes.
Playing with bodies in the winter.
Yes.
Torturing small animals in the spring.
Correct.
Scaring old ladies in the fall.
Ah, yes.
Yes. So, that's Freddy right there. That's some prime Freddy we got. We cut back to the hospital where Rachel and Jerry are looking through a photo album of family pictures, trying to see if it triggers any memory for him. Jerry smiles but seems to have no effect, but then flips to another page, asking Rachel why there are no pictures of him and Sally. Sally begins to answer but stutters a bit before Rachel reassures her it's okay because the bad things are part of his memory too. Jerry asks what, and Sally informs him that they just have not been getting along so well lately, and he's been overprotective with Sally growing up, driving, and dating. Rachel adds that he wasn't handling it so well.
Aww.
She flips to another page to try and get his focus back on the pictures. The album shows an interior of a home and a fireplace as Rachel states that that's their house, pointing out the den, stating that it took him 2 weeks to finish painting the den. Jerry begins to stare as he asks if she asks if he remembers that. The picture suddenly comes to life as a fire appears in the fireplace, and we pan over to see Jerry standing in the dark. The daydream is broken by Dr. Coppedge returning to the room and asking about the photos. Rachel asks her if there's anything that they can do to help speed up the process, but the doctor informs her it's best to just let him sleep as the memories usually return from the subconscious in his dreams.
Yes. The best possible medical diagnoses.
you just need some sleep.
You just need as much sleep as you can get all night, all day. Just sleep.
So Jerry questions how he can sleep, but Coppedge tells him that she'll prescribe him some sleeping pills
to help.
Yes,
she will.
We next see Jerry back asleep in the hospital bed, clearly having a nightmare. We see images of a figure removing bloody rubber gloves, a man reading documents by a fireplace, and that same man knocked on the floor with the documents thrown by him, ending with a shot of the man having a syringe put into his arm by the man with the gloves.
It looks a little sus.
Yes, it does. Does indeed. Suddenly a light is flicked on.
What was that? Did you like a fart go back up into your body?
No,
or what was that?
when they reveal that.
Yeah, what happened?
We'll get there. Yeah. When they reveal that, that always just skews me out a little bit.
What? You don't like? Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to remember that.
Suddenly
you just
a light.
Shared your fear.
Well, no, it's not mistake. Needles. It's we'll get there. Suddenly a light is flicked on by a noise waking him up for a shot. She administers or a nurse waking him. God, a typo.
He
there.
Wakes him up for an injection.
Yes.
Yeah.
A nurse waking him up for a shot. She administers the shot and leaves him as he sits in bed, wide awake and distraught. The next morning, Coppedge, along with Rachel and Sally, are back in the room as he holds the photo album. Coppedge asks how he slept, and Jerry informs her, not so good.
Aww.
He asks about his dreams being memories before the accident and if his dreams are 100% his memories. Coppage informs him that it could be a TV show or even a movie he watched before the accident or just about anything. Thanks, and Doc.
I mean, most of my memories are of TV shows or movies I watched, especially The Simpsons.
Yeah.
That's the big one that, like, I don't think I have a childhood. I just have Simpsons just references. Simpsons. Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah. You do have a lot of Simpsons references.
I know, dude. It was on three times in the in the afternoon. It was on three times. Four if you could get WXIX, which I could.
So Coppage informs him it could be a TV show or a movie that, or just about anything. Hearing this, Rachel asks what he dreamed about last night, and Jerry informs her that he's having nightmares, several disturbing ones to be exact, but they're just pieces and don't make any sense yet.
I'm having nightmares, several to be exact. That's a Black Devil Lull from Hell reference. I pray you didn't get it.
Rachel encourages him to look at pictures as he's got a great home, a beautiful wife and daughter, and overall a pretty good life. Coppage also encourages him to study the pictures and talk to his family and sleep.
Why would anybody want to talk to their family? David? What's it like to have a family?
Oh, jeez. Rachel asks Coppage if
what's it like?
It's great.
Is it nice?
It's nice. It's quite nice.
Is it warm?
It's warm as well.
Do they hug you?
They do hug, yes.
Do they tolerate the smell?
No.
That's fair. Good on them. Good on them. More sleep, though. She's completely right. More sleep. Yes. That's what he needs.
That's what he needs.
More sleep. Get those sleeping pills going, kids.
Rachel asks Coppage if they should take him home to where he can see things firsthand to help him jog the memory. Hearing this, Jerry flashes back to the car explosion after the cliff and states he doesn't think that he should drive home just yet. Coppage agrees as head trauma victims shouldn't travel long distances. Rachel then asks about transferring him to a hotel room, and Coppage states that they could switch him to an outpatient status as long as he promises to stay in bed and sleep once they get there.
Damn right. Gotta get that sleep.
Rachel adds it could help him to spend more time together as a family, and Jerry flashes back to the syringe nightmare again before telling Coppage that he would like to get out of the hospital.
Oh, boy.
We then see Jerry lounging on the hotel bed from the A story as he leans forward, pulling up a jawbreaker off the bed from behind his back.
I like that. That's a good callback.
Yeah, it was a good callback. Rachel comments on his terrible taste in clothes as she puts them away in his closet, but Jerry fires back, telling her that she's lucky he has good taste in wives.
Yeah, he's a... For a guy who just almost died and didn't even know his family, he's a horny sumbitch.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
So before getting off the bed and walking over to her, the two begin to make out, but Rachel stops, causing Jerry to ask what's wrong, stating, can't a man kiss his sexy wife?
Yeah, really? Can't a man kiss his sexy wife?
Rachel tells him, sure he can, but he never did like that. He never did. Not like that, at least.
Not since their honeymoon.
Not since their honeymoon.
Yeah, yeah.
Jerry spins her back around, telling her that he's about to change that as they make out more before Rachel reminds him that he's supposed to stay in bed and rest.
Yeah, but you know, honestly, don't you think disappointing his wife with sex would jog his memory very well? You know, he'd be like, wow, it's like it's Tuesday all over again.
So, not since their honeymoon, Jerry spins her around and says that he's about to change that. They make out more before Rachel reminds him he's supposed to stay in bed and rest. He then tells her that that's where he was heading, but Rachel tells him to get sleep, and she's going to take a bath before she goes into the bathroom, shutting the door.
Yeah, bath time.
Jerry makes his way over to Sally's room, knocking on the door. Whoa,
are you saying he was trying to get with his wife, right? Yes. And then that didn't work out, so then he was like, I'm going to go visit my daughter.
I'm going to go visit my daughter.
I've watched this video before.
He makes his way over to Sally's room, knocking on the door. She invites him in as he makes his way over to her, seated by the bed. She informs him she's studying calculus as he moves behind the chair, causing her to get up, clearly uncomfortable. Jerry apologizes, stating he forgot that they aren't getting along, and Sally tells him that it's okay. He tells her it's not okay and offers her a clean slate and to have a fresh start as he can't remember what he's done, but he wants them to be okay.
Oh, what a nice guy, though.
Sally thinks for a second before getting up and hugging him, but quickly reminds him that he's supposed to be sleeping.
Yeah, really? Get back to sleep, pal.
If you're playing at home, take a shot every time we mention he's supposed to be sleeping from this point on.
Why do you want everyone to die? Why are you prescribing straight death to our audience, Dave?
Jerry tells her he can't sleep, and Sally reminds him of the sleeping pills. He tells her he will go to sleep and leaves her room, but not before commenting she's got her old man's brains, which I thought was an odd line.
Ah, you got your old man's brains.
in a jar.
Sally reluctantly agrees and he exits. Jerry enters the bathroom with Rachel in the tub, soaking, stating, "Hello there." Rachel, surprised, tries to cover her breast nervously, and Jerry tells her that he's looking for his pills, and she tells him that they're on the dresser. Jerry goes to the dresser, opening Rachel's purse and pulling out her wallet. He begins to flip through the pictures, seeing ones of Rachel and Sally, but then suddenly sees a picture of Rachel with another man in her arms.
Uh-oh. Jerry another less attractive man.
That's mean.
No, that's more about how this the main character's kind of a dreamboat.
That's fair.
I mean, he's a good-looking guy for, you know, for 40 or something.
So he returns to the bathroom, confronting Rachel. Jerry returns, asking her, and Rachel questions where he got that, and he explains he found it while he was looking for the pills. Rachel explains that it's Frank, his business partner, causing him to ask her why she looks so cozy with her.
Yeah, why is she looking so up close and personal with the old, you know, old business partner?
Rachel states that his best friend, and he introduced the two of them, flipping to another picture for proof. Jerry apologizes and returns to the bedroom to try and sleep. We next see Rachel and Jerry in bed as he tosses and turns, clearly having another nightmare.
Oh, weird.
We watch in the dream as Jerry sneaks up on Frank, reading the documents by the fireplace, before Jerry hits him in the back of the head with a brick, knocking him to the floor with a bloody head wound. Jerry tells him, "Sorry, partner," before injecting the syringe into him again, like before. He suddenly wakes up and looks over at a sleeping Rachel before exiting the bed, pulls out her wallet again, looking at the picture of Frank and Rachel.
So, you don't like embolisms? Is that the problem?
It's not that.
Oh, okay. I'm getting curious.
Jerry returns to the bed, waking up Rachel, asking where is Frank. Rachel informs him Frank is dead as he had a heart attack in the den by the fireplace. She questions if he's remembering something, and Jerry states he's dreaming about it all, including the fact that he killed him by hitting him on the head and then injected air into his veins. That is...
That's what an embolism is, David.
I know. But embolisms freak me out because they are really, yeah, really hard to trace and also super easy to occur.
When you say super easy, is that because you're doing heroin every day? What are you talking
about?
There
was a story I read. I can't remember what state it took place in, but there was a kid who was apparently like pumping his bike tire. And this is an urban legend, but it just scared the shit out of me.
Okay. I'm still listening, yeah.
He was pumping up his bike tire and apparently something happened. He slipped and the thing came out of the tire and went into him. And when he went down, he pushed on the plunger and he killed himself. And ever since I heard that story, I think that can happen, but I'm just like, oh man, that would like be a shitty way to go, and it's really terrifying to think about that.
So you never eat Pop Rocks, do you, you poor bastard?
I love Pop Rocks. They're my favorite candy.
I mean, that's more reasonable than that a bike pump would just pop off and get and strike
it's
a vein.
Basically like 1,000 ways to die.
I mean, yeah.
So he injects air into his arm, and he then begins to tidy up, putting the brick back onto the stone of the fireplace, gathering the documents before stuffing them into his jacket and removing the gloves. We then see Rachel and Sally return home. Oh, wait a minute. Hang on. I think I jumped. Give me a second here.
No, you were right.
Oh, am I?
Yeah. They get home, and then he acts like he's innocent. Okay. Yeah, you got it.
Return home to find him over the body. Sally begins to cry as Jerry explains that he collapsed and died in his arms. Suddenly, Jerry wakes up before Rachel and Sally in front of the bed that he's now tied down to. Rachel asks if he remembers now, causing Jerry to ask what's going on. Sally states it's a good thing that Daddy had you over so often. We had plenty of pictures to jog your memory. Rachel adds, "My husband was a good man, Jerry." Jerry comes to the realization that he's not Rachel's husband and that it was Frank who he killed to cut him out of the business deal so he could take all the money. Jerry asks them what they're going to do, turn him in? And Rachel replies with no, stating that he would probably just go to jail for a few years. Jerry asks how did they know, and Rachel tells him that they didn't. Until he told them, injecting air to make it look like a heart attack. Rachel adds, now he's going to feel it himself as she begins to brings a syringe up, revealing the plan. Jerry asks them why they didn't kill him earlier, and Rachel replies with, oh, Jerry, because revenge is only sweet when the person you're punishing knows what they did.
And I would have to agree.
It took you a while, but you finally remembered. Jerry tries to plead, but Rachel tells him, goodbye, Jerry, have fun in hell, as she drives the syringe into him while he screams no.
Which, by the way, what a great classic... Kind of almost cliche of anthologies.
Yeah.
The amnesia, and then you realize you're the bad guy.
Yeah.
I love that because it's an honest fear.
Yes.
Because you're like, I just want to find out who I am. And then it's like, you were a fucking murderer. And you're like, but I wouldn't do that. It's like, you already did.
Yeah.
Although it makes me think of that Futurama thing where it's like, why should I believe you? You're Hitler.
episode, episode ends as we cut back to Freddy, who states, "Ah, memories light the corner of my mind." He pulls a piece of brain from the back of his head, stating, "Medulla oblongata." And that, my friends, is season 2, episode 2, Heartbreak Hotel.
Freddy is really...
he's on top of it.
He's at his height of Freddiness.
He really is.
In that one. And,
oh, God.
Uh-oh. Here he comes.
Here he comes.
Hey, bitch.
Hi, Freddy.
How you doing, pal?
Doing good, buddy. How are you?
Oh, you know, pretty good.
Good.
Thanks for asking.
Anytime.
You know, speaking of hotels, especially the one in Springwood, I took a blacklight to a room there once.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I was hoping everything that was glowing was blood, but... You don't want to stay there anyway.
No, no.
It's a dump. I'm a Motel 666 guy myself.
That was pretty good, Freddy. I'll give you that.
I don't care what you think.
That's fair.
Anyway, I gotta get going. I have a reservation to not be around losers anymore. Freddy, away!
Bye, Freddy.
Yeah, yeah. Take care, Freddy. Thanks, dude. I don't know, man. Freddy's
getting there.
Freddy's something. I don't know. I do like a good old Motel 666.
Motel 666. So. That was good. I'll give him that.
Thanks, Fred. Jesus.
So that is the episode. What are we going to give the rating, Henrik? Let's start with you, sir.
What are we? You're going to give the rating? You want to go with me?
I want to go with you.
I hate the rating system so much. So I found both stories to be perfectly amusing.
Yeah.
And the twist where basically it's death by grammar.
Yeah.
Death by grammar was a pretty solid twist.
Yeah.
Freddy is just out of his mind perfection.
Yes.
So I'm going to go ahead and give this one I think I gave a B plus last week.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this one a B.
I really did like this episode. I kind of enjoyed the B story a little bit more than the A story, but the A story is great. But the B story with that twist of the amnesia and that he already did the murder, I really, really like that. I'm going to go ahead and give this a C plus.
Okay. Oh, wow. So you didn't like it as much as me.
No, it wasn't anything bad. I will say it warmed up on me the second watch when I was writing my notes for it. But yeah, I think it's a good episode. But yeah, I would say C+ definitely on this one.
The dogs are really into this room, by the way. Henwolf just stepped right on Chicano. She does that. Okay, well, that's a pretty good rating.
Yes.
So, and I'm going to leave us before we get out of here. Uh-huh. Earlier, I made that joke about like, saying a nice thing about you and then not actually saying anything.
Yes.
And I want to correct that as I remind you to get your posture good.
I'm trying.
David, I actually do want to say a good thing about you. And that is that overall, by and large, throughout our entire friendship, you take criticism pretty well.
I appreciate that.
Sometimes not.
Yeah.
But overall, you do.
Yeah.
So as I'm literally poking you to remind you to get your posture up, I appreciate that you're not getting shitty about it. You're not getting offended by it. I just want you to look your best on the show.
I appreciate it, bro.
And so thank you, Dave, for doing the show with me, I guess, if you could call it that. And anything else?
So next week, we are going to be back with season 2, episode 3, Welcome to Springwood, directed by Ken Wiederhorn and written by our good friends Gilbert Adler and Al Katz.
Oh, another Gil and Al. Okay, cool. Well, before we get out of here, we have two emails.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So our first email is from our good buddy Patrick.
Okay.
Patrick just sent in a nice little message, said, love the podcast. You guys are great and always brighten my day. Aww. The interview with James Cappy was fascinating and awesome. His story was incredible.
Yeah.
Keep up the great work, Hen and Louie. Patrick.
That's awesome. Thanks, Patrick.
And this other one, I don't know this gentleman.
Okay.
This one's from
Peter.
Okay.
I feel weird saying people's last name, so I'm just going to say Peter.
Okay.
And he says, hey, guys, just wanted to say I've really been enjoying the podcast, and I'm looking forward to seeing season two be covered. So, obviously, I sometimes take a while to get to these. I remember how heavily advertised the series was here in the United Kingdom at VHS stores when I was a kid and still own my original copies I convinced my parents to buy for me.
That's awesome.
I only ever saw the Freddy focused episodes growing up, and I was happy to come across this podcast covering the entire show. All the best for the future of the podcast. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank
That's
you, Peter,
awesome.
For writing in. We do appreciate it. And I'm going to be a bastard for a second and say, if you love the show, Peter, Patreon. Freddy'sNightmares.com. Click on Patreon. You can see the show in video form and know that you're supporting what we're doing. But now, I think it's time to get out of here.
I think so.
Because the dogs probably want to be fed, and that's why they're around so much. So thank you so much for listening to Welcome to Primetime of Freddy's Nightmares Podcast. If you want to email us, reach out and cut someone. Send us an email at freddysnightmarespod@gmail.com. Also, send in your questions if you want us to ask Jeff Freilich some stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
We would be happy to do so. And hopefully soon we'll have some more guests. Dave is working on it.
I am indeed.
But until next time, Dave and I are going to go watch the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Yes, and we will see you next week in Springwood. Bye-bye.
See ya.